You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 315 of the podcast. And in this one, I chat with Annie Anderson. Annie has kindly agreed to share her OCD story with us. In it, we talk about relationship-themed OCD. We discuss her religion and how this played into her OCD, worrying about her partner's physical features, and also whether she felt in love, opening up to get help, a breakthrough she had, existential worries, finding effective therapy, what was helpful within that therapy for her, Annie's experiences of group therapy over Zoom, and much, much more. And thanks as always to NoCD for supporting the work that I do. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. If you wanted to find out more about their therapy services and whether they take your insurance currently, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or the link will be in the episode description. So thank you to Annie for her time and sharing her story. I deeply appreciate it. And thank you, as always, to you guys for listening to the show. It means a lot. And without further ado, here is Annie. Welcome to the show, Annie.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And, you know, I'd love to hear, and I'm sure the listeners would hear your story, OCD or otherwise.
Okay, well, I'm ready to tell it. I'm 48 now, and I don't think that I always had OCD. As a kid, I had some qualities that maybe, I don't know, would have been typical of people who end up getting OCD. I had extreme scab picking, really, really severe scab picker, which drove my mom crazy. And I remember when I hit puberty, I thought I had cancer. I ruminated over that. I was a gymnast, and I almost quit one time because I had gone flying off the bars, and I had heard about people who got paralyzed, and I just really ruminated about that. And my mom didn't let me quit, and I finally got over that. And I just was really, really obsessive about my weight as a teenager and young adult and exercise. I was probably kind of compulsive about exercise, maybe. It wasn't until I was 21 and I was a junior in college that I really had an episode with OCD and ROCD, as in relationship OCD, is what I had going on. So I was dating my now husband, and I could feel that things probably needed to go one way or the other. And especially in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, in our religion, you just don't date for a very long time. It's unusual. So I just kind of felt a lot of pressure to decide. And he kind of wanted to move toward marriage. So I was just kind of ruminating about it a lot. I just couldn't decide. And I wanted to do the right thing. And I was kind of seeking, I guess, advice or reassurance from other people, and especially from like my church leaders, my bishop. I just felt like maybe if someone told me what to do, I could do it. And I remember that my husband, my boyfriend at the time, loaned me a book about receiving answers to prayers, which I'm sure is a fine book, but not recommended for people with OCD. Because that really just made things worse. And it seems like, I know this is kind of typical, that one day my brain just kind of snapped. I just kind of went from being stressed out to, oh my gosh, what has happened to my life, my brain? I'll never be the same. You know, you go from feeling stressed out to feeling pain, just that horrible emotional pain, that is almost, out of proportion, you know? So then that increased my need to solve. So I really searched harder for answers from God. I was constantly praying. I was in our church. We have priesthood leaders, and they can give you a blessing. I was getting a fair amount of blessings. I thought maybe, you know, someone would tell me what to do and I could resolve it. And I was really caught up in trying to do the right thing. I thought there was a right thing. And by the way, I never got a straight up answer from anybody. You know, a lot of people said, well, you just need to decide. If you just decide, then you can go forward either one way or the other. But it seems like I would decide, and then I just, you know, then I would feel insecure again, and I could never move forward. So at the time that all this happened, it was kind of at the end of the school year, and I went home and lived with my mom and dad for the summer. And we continued to date. And I think, we probably fell more in love that summer. But it was just so, it was just so black and white and so euphoric or so devastating. There was no in between for me. If I didn't feel that euphoria, I just was fearful, and I felt threatened. And then I would start to ruminate again. I would try to undo my feelings. I would try to undo my thoughts. I wasn't sleeping well at all. I don't know, hardly at all. And I wasn't eating. I just didn't have an appetite. I couldn't, you know, my brain just was so stuck. I just couldn't think of anything else. I mean, I did keep my job, and I was, I guess, functional from an outsider's point of view. But I was just really in pieces. I think everyone I knew was kind of worried about me. I wasn't really one to keep it inside. So I, you know, people that were close to me knew that I was really distressed. And somehow during this time, I couldn't figure out exactly what it was about my boyfriend that was, you know, causing me to not feel in love all the time, and causing me to not be able to make a decision. And I somehow connected it to his glasses. When he would wear glasses, I wouldn't feel as crazy about him. Or if I would notice that his hairline was receding, I would, you know, I wouldn't feel as euphoric, I guess. And so those became spikes for me, the hairline and the eyeglasses.
I must be pretty triggering for you. I got the receding hairline and glasses.
it's familiar.
So I had to make the joke.
So that kind of made me feel shallow, that I had those kinds of thoughts, because I knew there were things wrong with me. So it made me feel judgmental and guilty. And I just thought, you know, sometimes it wouldn't bother me. So I would think, well, I'm okay. We can move forward. And then those feelings, you know, they just kind of fade. You can't stay euphoric. You can't stay sure about things like that forever. I mean, it it's so silly to think that you can stay in that euphoria all the time. And that was the only thing that really reassured me. So that summer, you know, I had a lot of highs and lows. We were still dating when it was time to go back to school the next year. I went back to school. He went back to school. It was just a couple of weeks in and I broke up with him. I remember we just had Little Caesar's pizza that he'd bought for me. And I just knew I was going to break up with him that day. I just couldn't stand it anymore. I knew that I couldn't go forward. And I think that, you know, you live a couple of months of OCD and the depression kind of starts to set in. And I had that going on. I just wasn't okay. And I knew that there was really no easy way out. So I broke up with him and we had a class together. It was kind of one of those breakups that was, I don't know, we still spent some time together. He was kind of my best friend. So during that time, one of my uncles contacted me and he told me that he'd had a similar experience. And that was interesting because it was really similar. I don't think he was ever diagnosed with OCD, but I do think he probably did have an episode or two in his life. So that was kind of interesting. And then after the breakup, I know I had a roommate that was really worried about me, and she called a man that had been our bishop a few years earlier, and he was a mental health counselor. She called him, and I saw him one time, and he just kind of told me, "I think you don't feel how you need to feel," and he just didn't notice, you know, he didn't pick up on OCD, which most people don't. And maybe I always think back, I wonder how honest I was about exactly what was going on in my mind. You know, it's probably easier to spot in someone who tells you exactly what's going on. So this was a hard year for me in school. After the fall quarter, my boyfriend left and went to another school. And I just really was, I think, you know, frustrated that the ruminating still was going on with me. It was like I was still trying to make a decision. I just couldn't get out of that. And I really had some significant depression. But I was pretty private about it. I didn't want to go to counseling. I was afraid that would put me in some kind of a category that, you know, would make me, I guess, be flawed or would make people think of me in a different way, which I feel silly about now. We were broken up for about 18 months. And we would run into each other occasionally, just kind of very occasionally, and talk on the phone a little bit once in a while. I dated some, but I recognized that whoever I was dating, you know, that I still had kind of these same kinds of problems, and I still couldn't really get my head out of the past relationship. It was just so frustrating, you know, it's just kind of that, like, how do I get back to the person I used to be? How do I forget that this ever happened to me and just be the person I was, you know, just that desperate search to get back to something. So it was my senior year I had two senior years of college, but my last senior year, he did come back to the same school that I was at. And I ran into him a little bit more. I started to, you know, I started to do better. I think I was probably 50% better, and the depression was lifted. And I was just really having fun at school. Just had a whole bunch of new roommates, and they were fun and crazy. And I was quite a bit better. And then I remember on Valentine's Day, I got a dozen roses, and I thought, well, who would send me a dozen roses? You know, I just couldn't figure it out. And, but anyway, I opened it up and opened up the note, and it was, my ex-boyfriend, my now husband. And I was just so, and he told me that he loved me, and I was just so, nervous and excited, and my roommates were excited. And I remember I did a backflip. I was so excited.
Oh, an actual backflip.
Yeah. I could in those days.
Yeah.
So at that point we started to kind of, I don't know, hang out a little bit. And by May, I think we were kind of dating again. I remember that we went on a kind of a big date. We went down to Vegas to Wet n' Wild, which was a big water park with a bunch of people. And I just kind of felt us getting back together. And I remember just panicking that night. I was fine during the day, but then I just kind of panicked. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is happening to me again. I can't handle this. And I just kind of fell apart. I don't know, the next day, I stayed up most of that night, and I just wasn't sure what I was going to do. But the next day I just kind of thought, no, this is not going to happen to me again. I'm not doing this again. And I'm just going to kind of ignore the torment that, and the alarms that my brain is sending me. I think I just realized it was kind of stealing my life. And I knew, you know, I was only going to be at the school another year. This was my last year. I was almost to graduate. I just felt like I wanted to move forward. So I just kind of, I think, decided I was willing to tolerate it. I didn't understand it, but I understood enough that I knew that it kind of misled me, and that it was making my life stand still. And so I was just kind of able to go forward, and just kind of, I guess when I would get those really strong warnings, I would just kind of say, well, this happens to me, but I wouldn't totally ignore it, but I just was able to kind of tolerate it. And then about 6 months later, we got engaged. And I remember that the morning after we got engaged, he picked me up and took me to breakfast. And he was wearing glasses, and my anxiety just shot way, way up. And I just felt really panicky. I just wasn't sure if I was going to be able to handle the engagement, but I made it through that day, and just kind of talked myself down, you know, just kind of knowing I'd probably feel different. And I think that the reason I was able to kind of get through that engagement was just, I had some kind of increased self-knowledge, because I had been through, you know, the OCD before, though I didn't call it OCD. And I think that we had a really strong friendship. I could be really honest with him. I mean, he knew what was going on. I didn't tell him, hey, it's the glasses or the hairline. But I was really honest with him. And I think that there was kind of enough euphoria and reassurance at that time that I was able to do it. And I think I stopped asking other people what I should do. I stopped even seeking really advice from my bishop, or not that I lost touch with my church or anything. I thought, if I'm going to do this, it's embarrassing if I'm going back and forth, you know? And so I really just stopped seeking reassurance. And I know now that probably really helped me. Yeah. And then I think that I just kind of took ownership of the decision. I didn't expect anyone to make it for me. I didn't expect I was going to feel, you know, totally perfect all the time. So yeah, we got married, and 9 months later we had two babies. So like my husband, we got married in March, and by December we had two babies. And so my husband had three more people on his taxes, I remember. It was a crazy year.
And I
was really happy married. I think that we had, you know, a good marriage. I don't think that we had any, you know, big problems or anything. I had kind of times where I would have the spikes come up, and I was just kind of able to almost expect them a little bit. And they just largely went away. So after being married 7 years, I had four kids. My oldest were six, and my littlest one was 10 months. And I remember I'd been on a vacation with the kids. My husband stayed home to work. And I just remember calling him to tell him that I was headed home. And all of a sudden I just thought, I don't know if I feel like excited. I don't know, you know, just kind of like, do I feel the same as I always felt? And I just started to feel that kind of urgency to feel that way. And by the time I got home, I was kind of ruminating, and I guess I didn't feel reassured enough. And I just kind of felt that freight train coming at me, you know, I just felt it happening again. It just happened so fast, and I just for some reason wasn't able to to kind of talk myself down. So I kind of felt like I had my old brain, like somebody just came and put my old brain inside my head, and it was like I was in that time again. When I was trying to decide whether to get married, and I was trying to decide how I felt about him, and that just happened to me. It was the same, felt like PTSD. I think it became really bad really fast because I just wasn't tolerating it at all. I felt like it shouldn't happen to someone with four kids, and I was just so distressed. I just felt like it might, you know, it was going to ruin my life and five other people's lives. And so I really started to go into prevention mode. I was praying. I was reading scriptures. I was reading, you know, religious books. I was seeking help from my stake president is what we call him, and my bishop, and I don't know, I just continued to get worse. I remember that I would sometimes go in my closet and just cry. And sometimes I'd ride my bike out to the fields where the crops were really tall and just go inside them and cry. I just was falling apart. And sometimes I would get that reassurance and I would think, well, what's the problem, you know? But I couldn't get that reassurance long enough. I think I felt betrayed by God. I felt like I had done what I should do. I you know, I got married, I had a family, I took this big risk, and suddenly it just was, it wasn't going to be okay. And I think I felt kind of resentful and just so scared. And I know, I mean, I did crazy things. Like I would kind of hang on to my husband in the night, just like I was afraid I was going to just take off or something, or I don't know. I was just so, so distressed. I think I even felt like, I felt like it might be Satan. I felt like maybe Satan was, you know, trying to get to me. So sometimes I would pray the whole night that like Satan wouldn't possess me almost. I was just so afraid that it was Satan. And after probably a month, I don't know, 2 months, I confided in, I had another uncle who was my doctor. I had actually lived with him for a summer, and I had a good relationship with him, and I confided in him what was going on. I was really honest. I told him about my obsessive thoughts, and he listened to me, and he had kids who had some really serious problems. He had a daughter that had anorexia and some other problems, and he was just quite well educated and really just empathetic. And he sent me to a counselor, and unfortunately it wasn't a very good fit for me. I think that the counselor thought I was a victim of trauma, I think, of maybe abuse or something. And I remember that I told him my story. I was desperate, and I was really honest, and it's like he didn't even hear me. I remember that he wrote the word dad on a piece of paper and circled it. Then he kind of wrote all my problems just kind of emanating from that word. And I just thought, well, did he not listen to me, you know? But I don't know. It was just so, but I was desperate enough. I went one more time, and then I just decided, you know, that's just not going to help me. It's just not. I knew it wasn't. And I went back to my uncle. I kept in touch with him, my uncle that was the doctor, and he would even call and check on me sometimes. And he was trying to get me on a medicine, and I just remember talking to him in his office, and he said, I don't know a lot about this, but I think you might have something called pure OCD. He said, it's kind of like OCD, but you know, there's not the compulsions. And he really didn't know a lot about it, but this was in 2004. And I'm still so amazed that he was familiar with it at all. I mean, he was a medical doctor, you know, and maybe he was a little bit familiar with it because his daughter that had anorexia had some OCD kind of behavior. Yeah. I don't know, but he was able to know that about me. And I went home and got on the internet and researched it and ran on to Steve Phillipson's article, Rethinking the Unthinkable. And I read through that and I thought, oh my gosh, this is my brain. This is my pattern. I can't even believe it, but it's like, I just saw that it was exactly what my brain did. The maze, the reassurance was so important. The rumination and kind of feeling like you're getting deeper and deeper into a maze. I read some of the case studies. I just recognized it so clearly. And I saw that they had phone counseling because I was in small town Utah and that was in New York. And so I called and got an appointment. And that's kind of where my story started to change. I was assigned to a girl that was pretty young. She was finishing her doctorate. I think she was 27. And she was just so good. I just can't believe the way that she was able to manage my crisis. I really think that I was on the verge of inpatient care. I just was not sleeping, not eating well, you know, had some depression, just so, so anxious. And I was thinking of just, you know, what I thought I should do is quit my job and just, I needed more time to solve my problems is what I thought. So that would have been worse. I'm glad she didn't, she talked me out of quitting my job. I was a gymnastics teacher and I only taught once a week, but it was so, so good for me. I think, you know, for me teaching gymnastics, it was my own program. It was, it was just so, it required all of my attention. And so it was kind of the only time sometimes that my brain would be a little bit normal just because it was really intense when I was in the gym. And so I'm really glad that she talked me out of it. I remember her saying, you know, whatever you give the anxiety, it's going to take. So you probably don't want to give it everything. So I did. I kept that going. I think she told me, you know, inpatient care is okay, but it's probably good if you can stay in your life. And I know that she had me call in twice a week for a while. I was just in so much distress. And I really, when I read the article and when I studied OCD, I think I really understood that that's what I had and that this place could help me. But when I started to learn about the therapy and the counterintuitiveness of it, I just thought, this is crazy, you know. So, you know, you just think, so I'm supposed to just sit in this anxiety and not escape it? Are you kidding me? You know, it was just so counterintuitive. I think it took me, probably 5 or 6 weeks before I really was able to try some of the things. I remember calling my uncle one night and just saying, it's just not working. I think maybe I should try something else. And I'm just spending so much money and I'm not getting better. And he said, well, sometimes it takes 5 or 6 weeks to really know if something's going to work. And he said to me, there's always a way to get more money. So he just kind of encouraged me to hang in there. And I'm so glad that he did, because it wasn't long after that, I kind of had a breakthrough. I called, in one night after hours. I mean, I was already calling in twice a week, but I called in one night after hours and I just told my therapist, I can't handle it anymore. I can't stand it anymore. You know, I'm going crazy. And she said, well, you can either keep trying what you're trying, or you can try to do the things that I'm telling you to do. You can try to let the anxiety kind of be there and, you know, or you can have it your way, but it doesn't seem to be working. And so that night I kind of just didn't try to escape the anxiety. I just let it be there. And I had relief. I had a significant amount of relief. And I think that just kind of helped me buy in a little bit. It kept me going. another problem that I had during that time, well, you know, there was sometimes I thought, well, I think I might have manic depression, or I am pretty sure I have schizophrenia, or, you know, I just couldn't, sometimes I just could not trust the diagnosis. I know it's typical. And another thing that happened to me, and I think it may have happened to me right about the time I started counseling, is my theme changed. So I just suddenly, had these existential themes of like, oh my heavens, it's weird to be in this body. It's weird to be on this planet floating around in outer space. I don't know if it's okay. You know, just kind of a whole new theme, just kind of left the other theme behind for a while. Let's see, kind of find my place here. So my therapist had me record my sessions. I had a little tape recorder that I plugged into the phone, and I would record every session, listen to it again, which I think served as an exposure and also just maybe helped me understand what I was doing a little better. It was really good for me. So that was part of what I did. I remember that I did capsule time at first. Maybe I did like 45 minutes twice a day, just kind of a time to ruminate and then try to put off the ruminating the rest of the day, which I was terrible at. I just, my brain was so, it was so stuck in ruminating, but I must have made a little progress. And then eventually I started ERP with the index cards. And yeah, that was kind of hard at first, but I think I caught on to that pretty fast. And since I never really put my spikes off, they were just, I was always spiking. It wasn't really any more distressing to do the cards. But I think it helped me gain some control. And also during that time, I think that my therapist was really working with me to let go of some of my rigidity. I was really, really, really rigid. And I felt really unsafe about being less rigid. I just felt like that would be my doom. You know, you just feel like it's what's keeping you safe. All these rules that you have about what you can think and what you can feel, and even about other people. And she kind of just helped me let go of that. And I think that helped me a little bit to be able to do ERP. And I also, during that time, the first few months I was in counseling, I just had a lot of themes. I had, you know, if I would watch the news and there was the lady that drowned all her 5 kids, and I thought, oh my gosh, I have 5 kids, and what if I drowned all my kids? And, you know, whatever I'd see, I'd just think, oh, am I capable of that? Could I do that? I had just had themes all over the place. I had a lot of support. I had, my mom was in town, my mom and dad. My mom was, you know, she'd teach school all day and then she'd come and help me. She helped me learn to sew during that time, just to kind of help me stay busy or do something that felt like that kept my brain a little bit busy. So I really appreciate the time that my mom gave me. My grandma lived just a couple houses away and she helped me a lot. I just kind of go over to her house a lot and I could help her and she could help me. She loved my kids. They were always over there. My mother-in-law was fairly close. I just really had good support. And also during this time, I got on, Effexor, which I don't know, I would never do that again because I was so tired on Effexor. I almost like couldn't even drive for 45 minutes without feeling like I was going to fall asleep. I was so tired. And then I had Ambien for a short time at night, which maybe I needed at the time. I was just not sleeping. So I had a few things to kind of get me through that crisis. I know one time, my husband and I were playing cards and I had taken an Ambien, and he said that I just fell over during the card game. I just fell over, and he carried me to bed because I was just out. So I probably was just on that for a month or two. I think that one of the things I learned to do in therapy that was really good is just kind of ride the roller coaster of emotions. Because any emotional shift at all, I was so hyper aware of, and everything just felt unstable and scary. So I just kind of learned to let my emotions kind of go up and down. And they were pretty extreme during that time, at least I thought they were. And another thing that my therapist had me do is stop talking about what was going on in my brain to anyone, really. So I think it just helped me gain some, to stop seeking reassurance and to gain some emotional maturity. Just knowing that I could handle things inside a little. Not everything had to be, you know, talked about or worried about. And that was really good for me. I can see now. And I just kind of, after I got out of crisis, I was trying to do well. My therapist left the center. She was done with her doctorate, I guess, or doing another rotation or something. And I got a new therapist. And she did a really good job also. I was just super, super lucky to have two really good therapists at the center. And the transition went really smoothly. I began to run during this time. I started to train for a half marathon. I had done running before. You know, gymnastics was my main thing, but I had done running also, and I like to run. So I think that was really good for me. I had a friend, you know, that we trained together, and also the running, I think it kept me probably from feeling, I don't know, so depressed, because I was still kind of getting out of depression. And it gave me a goal. And my friend had also had, I didn't know this about her, but she'd had some mental health struggles. So we were a good pair. Running became like a really great therapeutic thing that I did up until about 6 months ago. And now I'm kind of hurt, but that was really, really good for me. One thing I gained from going through OCD is an ability to put up with pain. And so I became a way better runner than I'd ever been. That was fun. Because I was not afraid of anything. I could really push myself way beyond what I ever could before. And that was really, really fun. It's just not working for me as well at 48 to push myself that hard, but it was really, really good for me during that journey. I remember one of the things that I did that I ran onto lately is this journal that my therapist had me keep, where I would, it was probably during like, I don't know, a rumination time that I was assigned, but I would kind of write down my worst thoughts or my worst feelings. And then I would rate myself for how many points is that worth? So if I was really distressed and I made it last really long and it was really scary, then I would give myself like 30 points. And if it was just kind of a little spike, I would give myself just a few points. And so that kind of helped me to just kind of make anxiety the goal almost and make those thoughts the goal. And I got to where I was getting pretty good at it. I think I was in counseling for probably 2 years. And then I just kind of felt like I could do it on my own. I did well. I had a book that was written by a man that had been at the center. Oh, and I don't know if you've ever seen it. It has like eyeglasses and handcuffs on it. And that was kind of my manual for all those years that I was not in counseling. I just kind of, when I would have a little bit of an episode not really an episode, I never really did have another one, I would go back and just reread that. And I was like, yeah, that's what my brain does. I know what to do. You know, I really had gained the acceptance mindset. I had a lot of skills that I could use. So I really did fine. And I just decided that I was going to have another baby, because I always had wanted one more baby. So that was kind of a challenge for me. And then I ended up on 4 months of bed rest. And that, I just thought, oh my gosh, I can't, what am I going to do? I'm kind of an anxious person, but I tolerated it well. I was able to do it, with really not a lot of trouble. And then the only other time I went back into counseling was a couple years later when we were building onto our house and I started to have a lot of ruminating. I just couldn't make decisions. So I went back in for maybe a couple months. I called into the center, and just kind of as a little pick me up, that helped me. I guess one of the things about me is that I was never ever going to tell anyone that this happened to me. I was like, okay, I got through this. I don't know how, but no one's going to know this about me unless they're real close to me. Like, you know, I just was not going to ever talk about it. But as the years went on, I think I had a lot of friends open up to me about their kind of mental health struggles, and my view on things just kind of changed. I became willing to even talk about my own struggles. I became open with my kids about it, and open with my friends about it if I thought it might help them. So my view just kind of changed on that. I think the one thing that I never did really do is, at least not a lot, is tell people that I had OCD. I kind of talked about it like it was anxiety, which it is. I mean, I agree with Steve Phillipson that OCD is an emotional disorder, that it's an anxiety disorder. I really feel that way. But I think that, you know, just like I hear a lot of people mention, so many people think that OCD is something different. And so when you tell someone that you have OCD, they think they don't understand what you have, and they assume that you have the perfectionism kind of OCD, which I did have some perfectionism going on, but, and then I guess to bring you up to speed, you know, about a year ago, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago, I decided to go back to school. I felt like, you know, I'm pretty bulletproof. I can do anxiety. I can do OCD. And it's not smart to think that way because I did have kind of I had some kind of big spikes hit me. And I handled them pretty well, but I was kind of living with a little bit of OCD again. It was making me nervous just because I felt like I had a lot riding on it. I was headed back to school to become a counselor. So I just thought, well, that's not acceptable. I can't be having OCD and going to counseling school. And so it panicked me a little bit. And I think I just kind of felt like, you know, I looked back on my time with OCD as I just felt like I was more of a girl then, and now I was, you know, a woman, and I had some married kids and a grandchild on the way, and like it just felt inappropriate to me. I just was not very tolerant of it. I was kind of resentful. Anyway, I got back into counseling at the center, and it's been good for me, and it's just kind of been a little brush up for me. And, you know, I kind of have a love hate relationship with OCD a little bit. Like, it really interests me, and I want to learn more about it, but, you know, it's hard to have OCD. It's not always fun. Just takes a lot of tolerance, but I think I've kind of learned to live well with OCD. And I don't have to have it or not have it. I can just kind of, you know, it's just part of me. And it doesn't need to dominate my life. I can go on. So that's kind of where I am now. Yeah. So do you have any questions for me?
Thank you for sharing your story. Like, yeah, I loved all the detail. And yeah. So I guess I don't have any questions about your story, because I think you did such a good job of laying it all out. I am curious. So you have gone back into sort of group therapy now.
I got into a group.
Yeah. What's that been like?
Well, it's been really interesting, because I have never spoken to anyone else that I knew had OCD. And so it's kind of fun to know that there's other people, you know, like you, even though I knew that before. Dr. Phillipson runs the group, at least a lot of the time. And so I was a little starstruck at first, because I have just lived by the things that he teaches for all these years. You know, I just really lived by those principles. So that's been interesting to get to know Steve a little bit. And I just love the people in my group. I love to hear about their successes, and the risk taking that they do, the hard things they do. They're just great people. I don't know. I enjoy it so much. And I've been doing it for a couple of months, and I finally kind of feel like I fit in, like a part of the group. It's kind of awkward at first. Like, you just don't know where people are coming from. And even though it's kind of a stable group, there's always a little different group. So it was kind of hard to get to know everyone, but I feel like I have gotten to know everyone now, and I just really enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm glad, because I think, yeah, groups, it's obviously different to one-on-one, but I'm glad you got used to it. And also, like you said, like, just meeting people, you knew they were out there, but mm-hmm. it's not the same as when you actually speak to someone, and it just hits differently.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it does. And I think too that it's really a valuable experience for me, going to school to become a counselor, to be not just in counseling but to get group experience.
Good point.
You know, I felt like, okay, if I'm going to school and I have the opportunity to learn, I don't know, twice as much by participating in counseling and doing group therapy, you know, is it worth it? And I just think, yeah, for sure it's worth it. Like, I'm going all in on this, and if this is going to help me, which I feel like it is, then I, you know, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that's a great way to look at it. Okay, so, you know, the next question is sort of like, words of hope for people with OCD, you know, or another way of saying it is just, I guess, words of hope for yourself as well. But if you think about when you were really struggling.
Yeah, I think I think it's something that I think my uncle said to me, and he said, you know, no one's tried everything. There's always different therapies and different counselors and new medications, and nobody has tried it all. So there's always hope. You just don't give up.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. So often we can try quite a few things and feel like we've tried everything, but there's infinite amount of counselors that you can go through and try, and sometimes find the right combination or the right combination of therapies, or medications or whatever. Yeah. Support groups. Yeah. Okay. So you pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old you. So at that point you were in college and struggling quite hard, I believe. Well, what do you tell her?
I think that I would, I think just it's maybe your best growth and education is going to come through really, really hard times. But it will be meaningful and it will be beautiful, because I feel like my story was really hard at times, but it's a beautiful story.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And then you've got a billboard in Utah. What do you want written on that billboard?
I think I ran onto something recently that I really like. And it is a Quaker proverb, and it says, I lift thee and thee lift me and we ascend together. Because I think that's what life's about, is helping other people, connecting with other people. And, you know, I think part of the reason I went back to school is I learned to overcome something, and I feel like if you learn to do that, then, you know, you could maybe help someone else. It gives you kind of a special opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Are you finding that going back to school and doing your course and your training, that your own personal experience is really helping you in your studying?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I sometimes wonder if when I'm reading about therapy and even like my life development course, lifespan development, I'm always considering myself or my kids. So it's hard to, it seems like my reference point is heavily on myself and my own family, but maybe that's how you start. So yeah.
Yeah.
But, and I, at first when I went back to school, I thought, well, I don't know if I'm going to ever tell anybody that I have OCD. Like, I don't know how that will go. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed that everybody in school is pretty open. And, so I've been open, and, I think that even a lot of people who, you know, might have a psychology degree, they misunderstand OCD. So it's kind of a platform for me, I think. Just kind of maybe open people's minds up a little bit to it. I learn a lot from my cohorts and their experiences with mental health. So yeah, so it's been kind of an open, kind of an open program that way.
Yeah, that's really good. And yeah, like you said, your peers will learn from your experience, and you from theirs. And yeah, in my own training, like you know, my reference point was myself. So I was constantly looking at everything from my experience, and that's okay, because that's how we learn. And then since doing more work with clients, it's now I'm thinking about them, you know, and learning because I'm using their stories and I'm trying to understand. So yeah, it's perfectly okay. That's definitely where I was.
Good to know.
Yeah. So, anything else lastly that you wish you could have said or shared today?
I think maybe there's a few things I wrote down. I guess I wrote down the things that I think I've learned. So maybe some of those will be interesting before we end. And I've learned that that God values agency and that He wants us to use it, and that we're not meant to just come here and just obey a plan. We're meant to use our brains and use our desires and figure life out that way. So I've also learned that God cares about growth over comfort, and that everyone is supposed to suffer some. It's how we kind of grow and develop. I've learned that I can be happy with life being very imperfect, that it can still be good. I think that for me, that OCD was a crucible. It is a place where it really tested me. It still does test me in some ways, but I've come out a person that I like better, that I respect better, that I think can do more good in the world. And I want to do good in the world.
Yeah, I like those. I like all of those. Definitely the one about, was it about perfection or yeah, is it, are you okay? Just, the third one, read that again.
That life can be good even though it can be very imperfect.
Exactly that. I think with OCD or anxiety or arguably any mental health, there's definitely this common experience for some people where, yeah, unless if there's any kind of amount of anxiety or uncomfortable feeling, I can't have a good day, or I can't live my life, or I can't go do what I want to do. And it's like you can feel anxious and still pursue your goals, still show up in your life. So I like that one.
Yeah, I think that's been really a good lesson for me. Raising 5 kids, there's just so much imperfection. And so I'm really grateful I was able to address that rigidity, at least when my kids were little. I'm still addressing it. I think one thing about raising kids is it really low in validation and really high in exposure. And so you, whatever things are going on with you that need to be addressed seem to be exposed by your kids. So I think, for me, when I'm addressing my kids' problems, recognizing where I'm trying to bring my own anxiety down instead of really do what's best for them. Mm-hmm. Because I've realized, especially lately, that a lot of times I am addressing my own anxiety instead of just kind of accepting it and then thinking, what do I need to do with this child that would really help them? Because I can tolerate the anxiety if I choose to.
Yeah, really, really good point. And I guess lastly, what came to my mind, just popped back up into my head from your story, is about when your therapist, you had that kind of, you called the emergency line or out of hours line, and and the therapist was like, you can keep doing what you're doing, or you can try my way. So at that point, were you resisting her way? Is that?
I think I was. Okay. I think that when I think back on it, I think that, on some level, I just thought there's got to be another way. Like, there has to be a different way to resolve anxiety that isn't so dangerous. Like, it just felt so dangerous to welcome anxiety, or at least to let it be there. I just thought that can't be right. I can't do it. I think it's some of those moments where I just, I have to like go to a hospital or something. I'm not going to make it. I don't know. Like there's just something more wrong with me than this person realizes. But she just was really able to, I guess, understand me and have enough faith in me and have enough trust in the therapy that she was able to challenge me and kind of confront me that night. And it just was a real turnaround for me. I just have so much respect for what she did, being so young as she was. I mean, I was young too. I was about 31. She was about 27, I think. But yeah, I just have the ultimate respect for what she did for me that night and lots of other times. But I'm so grateful that I was just able to give that a try.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultimately. Yeah. You then put it into practice and into action. So that's great. Yeah. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing your story. I've really enjoyed hearing it and the twists and turns and ultimately, you know, where you're at now and your ongoing journey.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it and I hope that it in some way helps somebody else.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.